I think it's the effort of having to actually move my fingers. I just want the entertainment shoved in my eyes. I don't want to have to do anything for the entertainment. I just want it to be like projected into my brain or something like that. I don't really know. Thanks for tuning in. This week on It Takes Four to Tango, the science behind singing in the shower,
my theory of motivation,
how an audiobook has changed my life,
and free climbing.
Okay, that sounds good. So, I'm going to be talking about the science behind singing in the shower. So, a bit of context to this story. I have a very bad habit. I often spend, 3 to 5 business days in the shower. And I also like to talk to myself and sing when I'm in the shower.
Don't we all? Know.
Yeah, obviously. Very common bad habit there. Anyway, so I was having a shower a couple of nights ago, and I'd watched The Sound of Music the night before I had my shower. So, of course, I was singing Do Re Mi. And the song Do Re Mi Fa So La Ti Do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Simeon. That was very helpful. And so I was singing it along, really, really jamming it out, having lots of fun. And because I'm completely normal, I thought, why don't I try and sing it backwards? So start at the final do and then go to the do at the beginning. And I thought it'd also be quite interesting. So I tried it, and I want you to all try it now. Okay. And those that are listening, try it now. Just what comes after it?
You want us to sing Do Re Mi backwards?
Yeah. But what comes after it? Just tell me.
It's Do.
Fa So.
Did you learn it backwards? Can you give us a demonstration?
Okay, I'll give you a demonstration. This is how it should go. Do Ti La So Fa Mi Re Do.
Do Ti La.
Fa So Ti La Ti Do.
Not even close.
Almost.
Not even close. Right, okay. So, as you can tell, if you've tried it at home or just listened to these three fools, it is very, very tricky. And, I literally was like, hang on a minute, which one comes next? It's like when someone asks you, like, what's the 12th letter of the alphabet? You're like, I have no idea. You got A, B, C. You're like, what? It was like that. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
And so I did a bit of research once I'd got out the shower and got back to my computer. And according to some studies, a normal human brain should be able to store 8 things in their short-term memory. Now, Do Re Mi Fa So La Ti Do is just 8 things. In fact, it's only 7 things. So surely I should be able to remember 7 things in my short-term memory.
When you say sing it backwards, do you mean the words in reverse order or actually like
the words in reverse order? Just
okay,
Do,
okay.
Ti, La, So, Fa, Mi, Re, Do in that order.
Okay.
And the right tune as well.
None.
Good luck with that.
Tuneful. Right. So I started doing some research on how our memory works, and it reminded me of another interesting story that I have from New Year. So we were at a New Year's party on New Year, of course, and somebody decided to blast out Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. And of course, to follow with the British culture, everybody joined in singing along as loud as they could, belting out all of the words perfectly, and including, splitting up and creating a little opera kind of scene going on. The
bit
girls,
of harmony.
A bit of harmony. Galileo, Galileo, Scaramouche, and et cetera, et cetera. And it was beautiful. A beautiful chorus, a beautiful harmony. However, what I noticed was someone later in the evening wanted to go get some drinks for everybody. And they were like, oh, what does everybody want? And, J2O and Schlur and all sorts of other soft drinks, just in case mum and dad are listening. So they took down maybe 5 or 6 drinks. But then they came back from the kitchen and they only had like 3 drinks in their hand because they'd just forgotten everything. And I was just like, how is it possible that somebody can remember 376 words to a nearly 6 minute song, but can't remember like five drinks. So essentially, to solve this problem, I had to do some research into how our memory works. So essentially, there's three parts to your memory: encoding, memory storage, and recall. Encoding is like writing the memory, putting it in your brain. Memory storage is storing the memory in your head. And recall is being able to find the memory again and access it. So when you make a memory, one of the billions of neurons in your brain will connect with all the other neurons that are around it to be able to save that piece of information. So if you're revising for a test, your teachers would often say to you, oh, why don't you put it in a song? And you were like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do mind maps, or I want to do practice questions. But basically, when you're remembering a song, there is a type of encoding, which is called semantic encoding, which is where the piece of information is connected with an emotion, so that when it's in your brain, it's the emotion can trigger the lyric, the piece of information. So what's actually happening when you're listening to a piece of music is the part of the music that comes before the lyrics is actually triggering the lyrics in your brain. So Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, the chorus part, the bit before the chorus part, the build up to it, is actually triggering in your brain the lyrics for the chorus. So when you get there, you have no problem just boop, absolutely smashing out all the lyrics to the chorus.
It's like that, you know, the game where you've got everything on the tray and you've got to remember what's on the tray, and then someone puts a blanket over it.
Yeah.
And it's, if you make a story with all the things on the tray, it helps you remember it because...
Absolutely. Right. Because the thing before triggers the next thing. So the first item on the tray is the first part of the story, and then that links to the next part of the story. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I found with revision for exams, when you make... flashcards with the first letter of the word, and you make acronym, I think the word is, and you make like a poem. The one for the planets. My very eager mother just made us noodles or something like that. And I don't think I'll ever forget that rhyme. I think that will stick to me till I'm 85. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, you always remember songs, don't you? Like, you never remember anything else other than the songs.
Yeah. So that is why your brain always remembers lyrics. However, it also explains why you can't remember them backwards, because the way that your brain is storing the information is in the specific order of do, re, mi. So it's remembering the order do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. So in your brain, when it's thinking, oh, what comes after do? Well, it's obviously re, because that's the way it's remembered it. So when you're asking it to do it backwards, it's just crazy. It's like trying to drive on the wrong side of the road. It's like, what is this? It just can't handle it. So that is why you can't sing a song backwards.
I suppose it's like lots of things, isn't it? Because we're always taught to learn everything right the first time, so you don't get into like a bad habit. And it's the same sort of thing. It's hard to relearn something, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Because, you know, when you first hear the song, that's the right way to sing it. But if somebody was taught the song the wrong way round, do, ti, la, so, fa, mi, re, do, then they would think that was the right way and they wouldn't be able to sing it properly. Like, it's weird.
There's this thing called the backwards bike. I'm not sure if any of you know about it. Where if you turn your handlebars to the right, then the front wheel will go to the left. And something happens about 5 hours after practicing, and it just clicks. Something in his head just clicks. So Caleb, maybe what happened in your brain after a while, after you'd said it over and over, something will just click with you, and you'll just...
Yeah. So I spent about 5 minutes practicing the shower to be able to do it backwards
five
properly.
Minutes, yeah.
No. Well, okay. A bit more than 5 minutes, but I was using my fingers. So I was holding up eight fingers, and then each one I assigned do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, and then I just did them backwards: do, ti, la, so, fa, mi, re, do.
With Ethan's length of shower, he could memorise anything, really.
I do have
Pi to 1 okay. million digits. Easy.
Okay. Shall I do mine?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So, obviously, we're all in quarantine at the moment, which means we've got...
Ooh, we're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah. So, we had a lot of people on Instagram saying, don't talk about quarantine. So, I'm going to talk about quarantine.
Great.
So, obviously, we've got... Lots of us have been sent work from school. I know I have. And I've got behind. And that's mainly because of lack of motivation. Well, that's what a lot of people would say. But my theory of motivation is that motivation doesn't really exist.
Controversial.
Okay. It's not that it doesn't exist. I think it does exist. But I think you can split it into two categories. And I think you can be motivated for things that have short-term benefit. So if you wanted to watch Netflix, you're easily motivated to watch Netflix. Or if you've got an exam the next day, it's really easy to be motivated to study for the exam the next day.
Says you.
speak for yourself. Things that are of long-term benefit, so if you want to get a certain career when you're older, but before that you have to get into uni, and before that you have to get your A-levels, and before that you have to get your GCSEs, it's hard to be motivated to work for your GCSEs if that benefit is so long-term. And that's why I don't think motivation exists for those sort of things. So I think we should scrap motivation and focus on discipline. Realistically, you're never going to want to do something that you don't want to do. No one wants to go to the gym. Nobody really wants to go out for a run. I mean, Ethan might. But it's hard to be motivated to do those sorts of things. And you're not actually going to be motivated to do those things. So it's discipline that takes over, where motivation is just a flawed theory. Like if you want to be good at maths, you have to practice maths. So being good at maths is the motivation for practicing maths, but we still won't practice maths because we don't want to practice maths.
Yeah. I heard.
What do you say about the people that absolutely love maths and that is their motivation, that they find motivation
that's,
through
I'd say that's short-term benefit, because if they love maths, then their motivation is because they love maths. But for your average Joe who doesn't love maths but wants to be a maths teacher, then
I think it's all to do with extrinsic and intrinsic motivation.
Whoa, dial it back, boss. I'm doing a beat.
So extrinsic motivation is motivation that comes from something that you don't feel yourself, but you're going to get. So, I don't know, you might train for a race, and the extrinsic motivation for training would be that you're going to win a medal. And that's the medal is your extrinsic motivation, whereas your intrinsic motivation is you might train because you love training.
But if you want to win the medal, then you've got to train, like you say. But if you wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, "Oh, I'm not going to train today because I'm not feeling motivated," at that point in time, you still want to win the medal, but you'd say, "Oh, I'm not motivated to go today to go out and train."
Yeah. So
motivation is flawed, and discipline takes over.
No, the solution to the problem is to convert the long term goals into short term motivation. So while the end goal would be the medal, the short term motivation could be to beat your friend's time at this, like, say he's running like a marathon, and you're training in like half marathons, or like you're running like 10 miles to like train yourself to get the distance, and you have a friend that can run 10 miles in a certain amount of time. Your short-term motivation would be to beat them, to brag.
Caleb, from your point, I find that to come even smaller, because I get motivation from looking at one corner of the road and say, I'm going to get to that corner. And then once you get to that corner, you get adrenaline from that. And for me, that is all the motivation you need. So from you saying to cut it down, to beat the person, which is even bigger, to get a bit smaller, you can say even the next step is just enough motivation.
Sure, Ethan, that leads on to my last point, really, which is that there's like a cycle of action leading to motivation. So often you don't want to go out and go for a run, but after you've been for a run, you'll feel motivated to do another run. And it's that cycle that sort of, you won't feel motivated beforehand, which is where I don't think motivation is a thing at that point. But then you have discipline, which makes you go out for a run. And then after that, you feel motivated to do another run.
Now, I can't agree with your point because I've never been for a run. But I have occasionally in the past, maybe once or twice, been known to do my college work, and it definitely did not motivate me to want me to do more college work, if you see what I mean. I definitely think
the result of your college work would have motivated you.
I think that if I've done like a massive chunk of work and you're like, yes, I've just been really, really productive, and then at that point you're feeling quite motivated.
No, I'm feeling like I've already achieved it. So that's like when you cross the finish line, you get the medal. You're like, yes, I've done it. Now I don't need to do anything for the rest of my life. I can turn into a blob.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think with motivation, it's like you guys have been saying, there's like loads of different ways you can lift it. But I think we can't rely on motivation because often like it's a throwabout word where if you need to be motivated to be able to do this. But I don't think that always applies in
sometimes
any situation.
Sometimes you've just got to get on with it.
Yeah.
It is true. Like, obviously, I enjoy certain activities. Like, take gaming, for example. At the minute, everyone's in quarantine. Everybody's casually at home. And lots of people are doing lots of gaming. But for some reason, I just haven't been feeling any motivation to do any gaming, even though normally I enjoy it. Instead, I've been very attracted to lying on the sofa and watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So.
why have you been away from video games? Why are you?
I actually have no idea. I think it's the effort of having to actually move my fingers. I just want the entertainment shoved in my eyes. I don't want to have to do anything for the entertainment. I just want it to be like projected into my brain. Or something like that. I don't really know.
Fair enough.
Go on, let's move on. Let's go on to my point. My topic was how audiobooks have changed my life. And a very big point in my life at the moment, you three all know about this, is my run, which I've been trying to do every day. And I would like to suggest that the one thing that's keeping me going is being able to listen.
I thought you were going to plug your Instagram in there.
Instagram. Run a read.
No, could you just explain for those people that don't know?
Yeah, what is your run?
What this is.
Okay, the people that don't know, I have decided to run every day 5 kilometers for every day of the year, so 365 days. At the recording of this, I am on day 107, I think. So if you'd like to donate to the NHS.
Yeah.
Get out my page, yeah.
Yeah, and it's for a really good cause as well, isn't it? So.
Yeah, especially at this time, because the world's going crazy at the moment. But leading on from your point, Ezra, about motivation, I find my motivation from when I can look at my phone and then press on. I've just subscribed to an app called Scribd. So it's basically Audible, little plug there, but... I know that I can turn it on and
we're not sponsored by Audible.
In a little audiobook. Yeah. We should be. Audible, if you're listening to this. But I know that I can turn on this audiobook and I can just get engrossed in this book, and then that my focus is just diverted. So I think with the motivation, if you can find motivation in something that can persuade you to do something else. So your motivation for doing schoolwork might be if I have a cookie next to me, I know I can't eat that cookie until I finish this whole page of.
So do you mean you're motivated like to do things you don't want to do because you know you can then go and listen to an audiobook? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think you can trick your mind into
Sorry, I got confused. I thought you were listening to the audiobooks while you were running, and it distracted you from the physical energy.
So I think it works both ways. Yeah, because you can be distracted from running and in the same way, but it can also work at the same time as instant gratification. So you can say, after I've done this work, I will definitely eat that cookie.
But
are you kind of on my way?
I kind of get what you're saying, but it's like I could go on a bike ride, like on a stationary bike, and watch Netflix, or I could lie in my bed and watch Netflix.
Yeah, but we're talking about audio.
Sorry, yeah.
So audiobooks have a little bit of education, depending on which audiobook you listen to.
You can listen to this podcast while you're in.
I'm not sure what I think about audiobooks. I don't know. I think they're just
amazing,
convenient.
I think, because
yeah,
that's why.
But I think, like, I don't know. I think you get more out of reading.
Just read a book. Yeah.
Can't do that while you're reading.
But I find it so convenient is because you can listen to the audiobook and run at the same time. You can't read a book and
run.
Go for a run.
So how has audiobooks changed your life?
It has opened my eyes to how much education there is out there. And I presume that in the future, everything could turn towards audiobooks and sway towards audiobooks and online videos. We know we've been using Zoom every day for the past, month. And the suggestion was that just through innovation, over the few years, I think everything will become online.
Right. Okay.
I think it's just a
break. Elon Musk, move out of the way. No one cares about your flying cars. We want audiobooks.
Oh, Elon
audiobooks
Musk.
Are the thing.
What a guy. No. So at the moment, I'm reading his biography.
Ooh.
Is that an audiobook or is it a physical book?
But, no. I'll talk about this next week, but I think Elon Musk's a pretty cool guy.
Can we get him on the podcast this week? We can
little
further to Silicon Valley.
Okay. So my little thing I want to talk about.
Insight of the week.
Little insight of the week is free climbing. So obviously because of lockdown and everything, got Disney Plus, and on there is a film called Free Solo, which is about a guy called Alex Honnold, who climbs El Capitan, which is a 3,000-foot rock wall in Yosemite National Park in California.
It's on the Apple wallpapers.
It is, yeah.
On the old Apple wallpapers.
My bad.
And the crazy thing about it is he does it like free solo, which means like without ropes or anything like that. To kind of put it into a bit of perspective, it's taller than two Empire State Buildings put on top of each other. Like, it's just mind-blowing. And there's a particularly crazy part of the climb which really stuck out to me, and it was called the Boulder Problem, where basically he moves along the wall horizontally on this tiny little ledge it has enough room for basically like half his fingers, and then he has to kind of kick out and push his foot against a wall that's perpendicular to the slab he's on already, and he's got to get his foot hold exactly right and put all of his weight, kind of lean and put all of his weight on this foot, and if he misses it, he's dead, basically. Like, it's crazy the amount of kind of precision that's required for that foot hold. Insane. And the film also briefly touched on how he processes fear, which was kind of the main thing that I wanted to talk about here. And it was really interesting because there's been quite a lot of speculation about kind of Alex's brain and stuff. And they did an MRI scan on him and showed him photos which would cause some kind of stimulation in his brain, kind of stuff like corpses or sinking ships. And kind of pretty heavy stuff,
yeah.
That you'd kind of expect some kind of emotional reaction to it. But they found that his amygdala, which is the part of the brain that experiences and processes all your emotions,
amygdala.
It just didn't activate at all. And so he basically just has no emotional feelings to
That's crazy.
Kind of low.
Surely that's like terrible for
so,
him.
Well, it allows him to climb, I suppose.
It is and it isn't. So it's kind of, he just, so he's what you'd call a sensation seeker. And they just require an insane amount of stimulation for their brain. So like a sensation seeker, they'd tend to take risks, take part in high risk activities. Not always good ones, stuff like, I don't know, high speed driving and ignoring traffic laws or alcohol and drug abuse. But obviously he's gone the other way and he like gets that high from kind of the climbing. It's not that he doesn't get scared. Like he's basically learned to block it out. And it's, they think because of the repetitiveness of the free solo climbs that he's kind of just got used to it.
Yeah.
So it's not that he's born with less.
No. Well, there's, so there was something very interesting about his early life when he was little. So his parents never told him they loved him, and like there wasn't any physical contact in the family. Like no one hugged anyone. Like he was saying that he had to learn to hug people when he was like 20.
Well, I think both his parents were like extreme climbers as well, weren't they?
His dad was an extreme traveller, so
but you know,
basically just...
I'm pretty sure his mum climbed
El Capitan, yeah.
She climbed it with ropes at like 65.
Wow.
All the way to the top. I'm pretty sure that's right.
it's a crazy hard climb even with ropes.
Yeah.
Like it takes people... I think it took him under 4 hours. He broke the 4 hour mark when he did his. And some people, it takes them weeks to climb it. Like obviously different routes and stuff, but it's crazy, and the effect it has on his life as well. So a lot of his girlfriends and stuff have been like, oh, I really care about you kind of thing, and he's just, on an interview he was just like, no you don't. Kind of
his emotions and stuff,
yeah, he doesn't understand that kind of connection.
Yeah.
When his mom used to have these, he said his mom used to have these sayings where it almost doesn't count and good enough isn't. And he said that they're like an aspect of why he solo is kind of, he needs to push himself to kind of be the best he can be kind of thing. And that's what free soloing does.
Is that something that he can learn? Can he like obtain that back from spending more time with people? Or is that just a disadvantage?
I feel like it's permanent. Like it's a disadvantage in some ways, but then an advantage in stuff like this, you know, like it enables him to do like this. You know, normal people don't do this kind of thing.
Absolutely not.
Like, it's definitely a matter of, like, minds rather than...
It's
like,
crazy to watch,
isn't
it?
Kind of thing. Yeah, it's
insane. Yeah, I've watched the documentary and I remember that the when he did the... one of the first times he'd attempted the... What was it called? The boulder problem. One of the first times he did it, he couldn't do it. And he had to come down again. But the time that he did it, he just got up and he just did it like as if it was nothing.
Yeah.
And he'd spent so long planning it and trying to map out exactly what he needed to do in order to not fall to his death. But the way he just got up and went to El Capitan and just did it like it was any other random day is just... He's just absolutely crazy.
He spends absolutely hours. Like he knows every single move he's going to do over the course of
I'm pretty sure
hours.
Though he'd never done the boulder problem successfully until he actually did it.
Yeah, so there were two ways he could have done it. So there was one where he, a dyno, which is like a jump from one ledge to the other, and he has to grab a hold of it, which with ropes, it's a lot easier because there's less of a obviously, you're not going to die, are you? You know, they take that risk when they've got ropes, but if you, it's a lot riskier to jump and grab it than it is, even though it's easier, if that makes sense. It's just very, very impressive.
Crazy.
I think you listen to audiobooks.
Don't try this out.
Well,
like an audio guide while he's going up. Look over to your left, you'll now see the beautiful landscapes of the Yosemite National Park.
Should we wrap up?
Okay, yeah, so I think that's all for this week. If you like this episode, make sure you tune in next Monday.